The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. That's Tom Fornelli. I'm Chip Patterson, and we're here because it's Thursday. And what do we do on Thursday? We lock it up. Okay, here's the deal. We've got some Week 0 games to preview. Everyone here will have the option to be able to signify it as a lock, which, of course, will go to our full season competition against each other, a competition of blood to see who is going to be the lock champion. We also are going to open up the floor if you would like to provide some good opportunities for a value prop, you know, whether that's a conference champion, whether it's a, you know, college football playoff prop, national champion, Heisman Trophy. This is really our last chance to be able to get in all that fun. So we're going to be doing it. Barton Simmons, Tom Fornelli, how we doing, gentlemen?
Ready to lock some things up here.
How are you doing, Chip? You're in the one that's in the midst of a move and yet still making time to lock some things up here.
Well, you mentioned that things can be challenging, so I kept that in the back of my mind. I packed my patience, and we've made it through. We've got a couple of HQ hits in and a couple of podcasts in. For right now, man, I'm very, very thankful that we've been able to keep everything together. So we're everything is still in place as much as it can be.
Well, I hope it doesn't. I hope that this doesn't come up later as some sort of an excuse for a missed pick or a missed lock. There are no excuses in locks.
No excuses. Absolutely not.
What's your new address?
My new address is beep. You think that after giving out all this proprietary information, good or bad, I'm going to give out that personal information?
I was just checking to see if it would work.
All right, are y'all ready to lock it up?
Yep.
We're picking locks.
My Blue Plate special 5-star locks are coming.
Come get these locks.
5-star master lock. Lock it up.
You want these locks?
I'm living and dying every point, every cover.
Okay, so again, like I mentioned, this is going to be a little bit more preview style, unless we want to signify something as specifically a lock, and we are going to begin with the game in Camping World Stadium in Orlando. It's going to be the Florida Gators. It's going to be the Miami Hurricanes, and I want to sort of... There's like this creeping rumor time, and I'd almost forgotten that this happens every single time of year. So as we're trying to make predictions for not only this week, but the first week of the season, how as a picker, as somebody who's always looking at the number and trying to find the values, how much do y'all put into rumors of suspensions? Because, you know, any big time program seems like we're always going to have a couple and we're always going to have some rumors. Would you let that sway you, or, you know, where do you let it come into your decision-making process in terms of making your game pick?
I am working under the assumption that there will be some suspensions, some unexpected missed starts, but I'm not going to dig into it, into the weeds too much. I'm going to, so, you know, there's, I don't think there's any quarterbacks, you know, that I'm expecting to be suspended. So beyond that, I'm not going to let it affect me too much. I'm not going to take my eye off the ball.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like a situation where one thing I'm considering too, like maybe Florida and Miami have some suspensions that could be coming, but I would be a lot more wary of them if they were playing, you know, like Akron. Like, you know, like before the game starts, Dan Mullen announces half his starting offensive line is sitting against, but I don't know, against in a game in the season opener against Miami, you know, you wonder if the coaches might be a little more lenient that week with punishment. So I put some stock into it, and you have to consider it because it's week one, that very first game of the year is when things just kind of come out of nowhere because coaches really haven't said anything about it for the, you know, during camp. Most practices are closed, so you don't really get an idea. And the ones that they do open to the media, the kids that are getting suspended are generally practicing those days because they don't want to tip their hands on anything. So you're wary of it, and you're aware that it could happen and it could blow something up. So maybe you want to wait as long as possible before you actually make your play. But at the same time, you just, you know, if you just go with the information you have and try to make the best decision from there.
So, yeah, I was talking to somebody about this, and there strikes me as, you know, you could consider the rumors and what have you, but there's a very real scenario, I think, where Dan Mullen might just, you know, he's got a couple guys penciled in as suspended for the game or for a half or something, but once game week approaches and kickoff starts inching nearer, you know, he just sort of rips the suspension up and just says, you know what, I think we're going to need you guys. Let's roll. So I'm not going to be held hostage by a potential suspension.
You all look very contrite, and you look like you realize what you did, and you're very sorry. And you know what? We're going to move forward.
Right.
I scared you, right? I scared you.
Yeah,
scared
yeah,
you
guys. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let that be a lesson.
Let that. yes. All right. So our point spread here right now is at 7.5, pretty much across the board. Our over under set at 47.5. I will say, Barton first, you know, what's your feel on this game?
Well, I'm going to start with my only lock of the week.
Okay.
And I actually like two plays on this, but I think I'm only willing to lock up one. I'm worried I'm locking up the wrong one, but I'm locking up the under. So under 47.5. My thought process is this: one, all right, Miami's starting Jaren Williams, redshirt freshman quarterback. He's thrown three passes in his career, all of them against Savannah State. I think Miami made the right call at quarterback. I also think that if, you know, Jaren Williams beating out Nikosi Perry and Tate Martell does not mean that Jaren Williams is going to come out guns a-blazing as the next great Miami quarterback. He might be the next great Miami quarterback. My contention and my expectation is that it is going to take some time to grow into that role. And so I don't think this is the Jaren Williams grand reveal here. I think this is the first step in his career, and what's going to be probably a career where he starts a lot of games and wins a lot of games. But I don't think it's going to necessarily look pretty day one. It doesn't help that he's got a true freshman left tackle in Zion Nelson, who was 240 pounds this time last year. He's got a redshirt freshman right tackle who is a good bit bigger, but not necessarily a polished product from a pass blocking standpoint. So true freshman or redshirt freshman quarterback, two freshman offensive tackles going against a Todd Grantham defense that can be a little tricky to navigate. It can be a little tricky to in terms of the looks, the different ways that they're going to attack you. They're going to blitz you a lot, and they're going to be really aggressive. And so I think that those are some things that are that could. So I think for that reason, like, I think Miami might be a little bit conservative. I also just sort of expect Florida to be relatively conservative. Remember, that's a rebuild offensive line too. That's the big question mark for this Florida team is offensive line. And I don't think they're going to be great week one. And I think Miami's defense is going to be pretty good. So I think I think that there's a very – I think Dan Mullen is going to play it a little bit tight to the vest, know that he's got sort of the more experienced quarterback, know that he's got a quarterback that you can grind out some yardage with in the run game as well. And I could see this being a very low-scoring, very defensive-oriented game that's a little bit more of a survival fest than a shootout. And I think the one thing that worries me, honestly, in this under is I could see some defensive scores.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to keep me up on Friday night, I think, a little bit, is those defense potential defensive scores. But that said, I think the under 47.5 is the play here I feel most comfortable with. And I don't know whether I'd lock this up in a typical week, frankly, but with limited options, I'm not going to go
lockless.
I got to get in the game. Yeah, got to get in the game week one, week zero.
Lock agreement. Absolutely.
Lock unity.
Whoa. Yes.
Right off the bat. Welcome to 2019.
Early in the year. Woo.
This is like a movie where the three main characters begin as friends and then life just tears them apart as the movie goes on.
No doubt. Your fears are the one thing that is absolute, because this thing, like, Tom, I think that you got this at 50, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, like, you got on the north side of 49. That's good. This thing's dropping. It might continue to drop. And the fear is, I was thinking not only the defensive touchdowns, but you've got just dudes all over the place, like special teams. We could have a special teams touchdown. I could, like, KJ Osborne's a really good punt returner. Like, that could be a place where you catch a touchdown that could really turn this into a sweaty situation. Also, you know, crampy, it's hot, it's humid. One cornerback goes down with a little cramp, that becomes a touchdown. But as a matter of doggone principle, like, this is going to be a game that neither this game, win or lose, doesn't do a whole lot in my mind for Florida or Miami. I'm sure they're both excited to be a part of it, but, like, they would have much rather opened up in a regular week one. I think if the coaches had their way, they would have rather opened up in a regular week one and not had to go through the whole hoopla of moving up the schedule and kind of getting everyone out of their rhythm. I think being out of their rhythm leads to things being both conservative and clunky. And yeah, absolutely. I think my score for this game is 23-13. And so, yeah, I'm still sitting on this under. How you feel, Tom?
As Barton alluded, we will all three of us be living in fear of the defensive touchdown, because these are two very aggressive defenses who like to put pressure on you. And as Barton mentioned, these are also two very young offensive lines. And if you look, you know, Phil Steele puts out his returning starts and offensive line chart in the preseason. So of 129 teams, because he doesn't have Liberty on it, Miami ranks 122nd with 30 career starts on its offensive line. Florida ranks 126th with 24. These are two very inexperienced offensive lines. And like you said, Chip, they're probably going to be conservative because this game was moved up a week. So you've got the freshman QB on one side behind a very young offensive line. You've got a veteran QB on the other side, but also behind a very inexperienced offensive line in a huge game to open the season before you know who really anybody is yet, because you've just been practicing and scrimmaging and you can learn something from that, but you don't really learn who your players are until they're on the field lined up against across from somebody. So I think we're going to see a very conservative approach on both sides, and it's the under just seems like the smarter play. I liked Florida when it was still at -7, simply because I do think Florida is the better team than Miami, both going into the season, and I think that will show over the course of the season. But since the announcement of the quarterback announcement for Miami, that line has moved at 0.5 points. So now Miami's getting 7.5 instead of just 7. And that hook is very scary on the spread. So while I still lean Florida's direction in that way, there's no way in the world I could lock it up with that hook there.
Yeah, I am also leaning Florida, laying the points. I think when the line initially came out, I was inclined to think like, oh, an in-state rivalry, two talented teams, Miami's going to keep it close. Seems like the Miami should be the play here. But the more I just sort of thought about it, looked into it, dug around, like this just, I just don't think Miami is ready to, I think Florida is just a better team. I think they're significantly further along. And I think that they, like I was tempted to take the Florida laying the points over the under. I could see a rock fight of a game that Miami just keeps it ugly. But I think Florida is clearly the play to me if you're going to pick a side too.
I foresee like a lot of situations where, you know, Miami is unable to, win the field position battle. Florida gets a lot of scoring chances. But then Miami's defense is really, really good. Like I am in my underplay expecting that it's going to be a lot of seeing Felipe Franks get a first and goal, but then have that end up being a field goal situation, or have it be, get inside the 40 with a scoring opportunity, but then it's a false start on the offensive line. You know, basically the sweatiest possible combination. I am wondering though, because we're all on Florida. If Miami wins this game, if Miami like wins, what is the mindset of a Florida Gator with an extra week to think about that?
Dark, dark places.
Right?
This fan base is like furious if you say they're going to go 8-4. Like, there are very high expectations amongst the Florida fans for this season. And it's certainly within like the realm of realistic possibilities that Florida goes 10-2 or 9-3 or even
don't go 11-1 drawing Auburn and LSU from the other division and having Georgia on the schedule.
Having Georgia. I mean, yeah, it seems like Florida fans think that's more likely than 8-4, which strikes me as not a realistic mentality.
What I can't believe is there's a fan base with unrealistic expectations before the season.
Stunning.
This is going to be, I think this is, if Miami somehow wins this game, that's going to be an interesting temperature to gauge in Gainesville.
Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, if Miami wins this game, prepare for 2 weeks of there's a real threat to Clemson in the ACC.
That's true. That's true.
Because the overreaction will go both ways.
Yeah. And no team can elicit more overreaction than the U, just because everybody wants them to be so back.
Is this the best Miami team since 2003?
Oh, man. It's that. So because Miami loses and there's probably some specific over or under reactions that might be tied maybe to the quarterback position, or, Florida might like the way that, one player sort of broke out. That as we are all sort of hinting at the same feeling as as you mentioned, Tom, with the line movement where they had to move it up to the hook, I don't have the numbers pulled up, but I would assume that we're dealing with a decent percentage of the action so far being on the Gators.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it?
Well,
I almost would expect more, especially with it being 7.5. I would expect more to be on Miami.
I got it at 55. I got it 55% of the bet, 64% of the money on the Gators.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's evened out a bit considering where it was, I would say, probably like a week and a half ago. But it's still the majority of the money is firmly on Florida's side of the line.
The nightcap will be on your favorite CBS Sports Network. It's going to be out on the Big Island, Arizona at Hawaii. Kevin Sumlin, Khalil Tate, Cole McDonald, and DeBose. It is an 11-point spread in favor of the Wildcats, over-under set at either 74, 73.5. Tom, are you going to have any locks here? And regardless, what's your feeling on the game?
You knew to go to Tom first on the old Hawaii feature game.
I do have a lock, actually.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
I was considering locking up the under 74 based on principle, but I'm not nearly as confident in that as I am right now in Hawaii plus 11. That's my lock. I think this Hawaii team is something of a dark horse in the Mountain West this year, where, you know, you look at Fresno State's replacing a lot of key players. And this is a Hawaii team that, if you look returning starter wise, they've got 18 returning starters, 9 on offense, 9 on defense. That includes their quarterback, Cole McDonald. And this was a team that took, you know, a step forward last year after going, I can't remember what it was. They went 3-9 in 2017, bumped up to 8-6 last year. And a lot of that was, you know, beating up on teams it was better than. But, hey, that's how you win. You have to beat up other teams you're better than. They did struggle against the tougher teams in the Mountain West, but again, a lot of those teams, like Fresno, have lost a ton of players. So when I look at this Hawaii team, it's an offense that gave a lot of defenses problems. Arizona's defense last year wasn't exactly stalwart. There's a lot of experience. You've got an experienced QB in Cole McDonald. You're at home. Arizona's got to fly 3,000 miles out to Honolulu to play the game, and it's, you know, before school starts. So in a way, you know, it'd be, I know they're approaching it like a business trip because that's what all football teams do when they go on the road. But if you're an Arizona player, school starts in a couple weeks, right?
Yeah.
This is like the end of your summer break in a way. So you're going to Hawaii and right before school starts. So maybe you're kind of distracted. And I think Arizona's going to win the game. But I just look at it where they've, like we talked about with Florida and Miami, it's not as drastic. But Arizona's got some new people on that offensive line they've got to work into. Khalil Tate definitely improved in that offense as the year went on. But I don't know if he's just going to suddenly be amazing again this year. And I just look at this and I see a shootout. I mean, the total is 74 for a reason. I don't think there are going to be a lot of three and outs or punts in this game. I think we're going to see a lot of up and down the field action and touchdowns. And I think that Hawaii is going to be able to stick within 11 points of the Wildcats.
Yeah, I am not locking this up. I am just on principle. I'm not going to play Hawaii in week 0. But I also like Hawaii plus the 11. That's the side when I've been asked it on Sportsline or whatever, I'm saying, you know, take the points. But you know, I think the experience Hawaii returns, I think Nick Rolovich is a really good coach, and I think there's a lot of unknown on the Arizona State side. I do think that Khalil Tate, there is a scenario this season where Khalil Tate is back to the 2017 version.
I hope so. Cause that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, he was injured last year and like that. Now, granted, it wasn't pretty before he was injured, but once he got injured, that sort of took the old school Khalil Tate off the table. So I wonder if they kind of learned a lesson from last year and are going to play to his strengths a little bit more. And who knows what that will entail. J.J. Taylor's still a really good running back. So there's weapons there. But I'm inclined to take Hawaii in the points at home as well. Just because I think Hawaii is, they're playing three Pac-12 teams to start the season. Like they're going to be dialed in to try to pull an upset on one of them. So I think this is a good opportunity for them to try to get a cover at the very least.
When you're,
for what it's worth, Hawaii 8-2 against the spread in its last 10 games against the Pac-12.
That's a strong number there.
Hey, Tom, what's that against the spread number at home?
At home, we don't need to go over that, Chip. No, this is awful. In Hawaii's last 29 home games, so pretty much nearly four seasons worth, they're 6-22-1 against the spread.
So,
wow. But
some bad teams.
The last few years have been pretty bad.
Yeah. Right.
They're running that run and shoot again, Chip.
Yeah.
Things are about to change.
Things are different. I feel you. No, I've been thinking about this game way too much because I woke up this morning thinking about this game and I was wondering if there's a really good Hawaii cover opportunity just based on the Kevin Sumlin wanting to keep it bland. Just thinking that this is truly like a week zero. This is the scrimmage that you're going to run against the high school from across the team, or like, was it like those high school football showcases where you might be just going out there, be a whole bunch of teams, real busy sort of atmosphere. I could see it being almost an NFL preseason type playbook for the Wildcats. And maybe that does mean that we don't have as many just sort of like the explosive plays that are set up by the play calling. He's just more of, you know, throwing them out there, letting them see how it goes. And so that would be a reason to back Hawaii. The other side being that, you know, maybe this is a confidence building game for Khalil Tate. And as you mentioned, like he had not just like a few injuries, but he's a dual threat quarterback who was dealing with toe, ankle, and shoulder injuries. Like those are all directly impactful to his ability to be a good dual threat quarterback. And as people are excited that he might be able to be back, as you mentioned, of sorts, maybe this turns into a Khalil Tate highlight reel. But Khalil Tate and Cole McDonald, look, if you really want to get frisky, let's see, what's the line doing? I would never do it, but if you want to take the over, I wouldn't yell at you for it. It goes against my principles, but I could see this game being kind of bananas.
Just to recap, Baker Mayfield wakes up feeling dangerous. Chip Patterson wakes up thinking about Hawaii football.
That's right. Coming up on the other side, we will be breaking down some last-minute preseason props. All that next.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Barton, do you have any preseason props that you want to lock up?
No, I feel like I sort of showed up at class and didn't get the homework assignment. I did not dig into props. I'm not a big prop guy anyways, but no, I got nothing. I'm just going to have to listen to you guys.
Well, I mean, we're still just sort of breaking it down because I'm not going to lock up everything, but I do have a couple of potential value picks that if you want to be sitting on a lottery ticket and holding on to it, I may or may not be there with you, but Tom, what you got? You've got something that you want to put on the locks board, right?
No,
More value picks.
You know why? I'll tell you why I don't want to put it on the locks board, because I feel like if any of them hit, then I win the locks contest, and I don't want that to be the case where it's like, you know, we pick games all season and then I hit like a 20-1 preseason bet and that just jumps me to first place.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, what you got, Tom? You go first.
I'll start with one I kind of alluded to a minute ago in my last pick. I'm taking Hawaii at 6-1 to win the Mountain West West Division. Because a lot, like I said, Fresno State is, you know, I'm a big time believer in Jeff Tedford. I still think that they're the favorite in that division, but they lose a lot of people from that team last year that, you know, the important people, not just, you know, your average. We lost seven starters. They lost like, you know, seven or eight key starters on that offense. So I think Hawaii at 6-1 is pretty good value to win that division, because it's somewhat open after you look at that. And then, you know, of course, Utah State lost, you know, Matt Wells to Texas Tech. There's a lot of turnover there as well. So I kind of like, with Hawaii having so much experience coming back, I think that there's something of a dark horse in that division. At 6-1, I like the price.
Heck yes. So the Mountain West, I will admit, has been a little bit of a blind spot for me. How is it your confidence in Hawaii, or is it, as you're continuing to survey that whole conference, you feel pretty good about where everyone's at, or at least you've got your hunches?
I mean, it's a combination of things. It's like, you know, first of all, when it comes to volatility in divisions or in conferences, technically the group of five is where you're going to find more of a swing from year to year. In the Power Five conferences, things are pretty much set for a while, but if you look, you know, it's like I said, Fresno State lost a ton. Nevada had a good season, but it loses a couple key guys as well. And it's not it wasn't, you know, a juggernaut. San Diego State, I think, is maybe primed for a bounce back season, but I can't assume it. San Jose State was bad. UNLV doesn't really seem to be anything. So when you look at it, I feel like it's kind of a two team race at this point for the division title. So if I'm getting 6-1 on Hawaii, why not take it? So. But I'm also only taking them to win the division, because you look in that other division and you got Boise State,
right?
And it's like, I don't know if they're going to win the conference, but I think they can get to the Mountain West title game.
Barton, got any thoughts?
No, I don't have any thoughts on that.
I'm going with the conference champion, and I alluded to it a little bit during win total picks. And I think it's just time to go ahead and drop it, because there's some pretty impressive value on taking the Houston Cougars to win the American Athletic Conference. The favorites in that league, according to the odds makers, are, of course, you know, UCF, followed by Memphis. And then all of a sudden, right down there at plus 620, as I'm looking at it right now, that is where you'll find Dana Holgorsen, Derek King, and the Houston Cougars. Now, there's two things that I like about this. Number one, I've already, you know, mentioned that I'm really excited about Dana and Derek, and I think that is going to create all kinds of offense. That, you know, defense might be a little bit optional, but such is life in the American Athletic Conference. But I think that the path there, while the East has been, you know, the bottom of the East with UConn and where ECU's been, like, that's definitely been where you pick up some of your easy wins. But I think the battle at the top is a little bit more cluttered in the AAC East. I think in the West, depending on how you feel about Mike Norvell and Memphis, I think that the door is open for Houston to be able to get there. And if Houston can get to the AAC title game, then I think that they've got a good chance to win it. So I think they're maybe like fourth or fifth on the odds board. You know, you're going to be getting that nice plus 620 payout. And so I'm going to go with the Cougs to win the AAC.
Did you see Dana Holgorsen throwing shade on the previous regime preseason?
Yes.
I did not,
well,
but
looks
I'm
like
here
they're
for
gonna
it.
Have to work this year.
Yeah. He was like, you know, practice is going okay. I mean, we're working hard. I mean, these guys, I don't think they're used to working hard. I don't think they really, you know, they gotta fight through it. They're not used to practicing hard and being coached hard. And so we gotta get them on board with that, or something to that effect. So
pretty much said that the last couple regimes have been babying them, but not coming out and saying it.
I mean, like, there was What were like the stones that Tom Herman put in? Like, remember it was like a walkway or a pathway that he was putting in to try to like take you from the locker room to the practice field?
The Infinity Stones? That's Avengers, Chip.
It was maybe like motivational messages on each walkway or something. I mean, it wasn't the P chart. The P chart was definitely at Texas, but I could see I could see Dana, especially after, you know, there's nothing about last year's Houston team that inspires that I think everything was going well. Like the Ed Oliver, Major Applewhite back and forth to me was probably much more of an indication of where Major Applewhite was with that entire locker room rather than an Ed Oliver thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, that just based on some like the Ed Oliver stuff on the sideline, you get the feeling that the players had some power in that program.
Hey, now it's the Dana era. Let's go.
As for your pick, I don't hate it at all. I mean, I think if they win their division and get to the title game, then yeah, it's almost a coin flip. But my concern is that, like we just said, Ed Oliver's gone. And he's not the only member of that defense that's gone. Like, pretty much everybody on that defense that did something last year is gone. And so it's like, yes, it's the AAC, and you're kind of just trying to outscore people for the most part. But when it comes up to playing against UCF, you're going to need to make a stop. And I don't know if Houston's going to be able to make the stops. And plus, like, UCF has plenty to replace itself. But as far as recruiting is concerned, the Knights have been recruiting on a level unto themselves in that conference when compared to everybody else. It's Houston's recruited fine. It's just UCF is, you know, recruiting very, very well, like elite for a group of five school, whereas Houston is just, hey, they've recruited well. So I don't know if Houston really has the bullets to just replace a lot of those guys and really, you know, keep pace with UCF.
Houston plays who, like Oklahoma week one?
Yeah. In yeah, Norman on Sunday night.
There's going to be a few points scored there. There's going to be a lot of overs on that Houston schedule this year. So I guess we're going to see how hard, see what Dana Holgorsen can do in terms of producing points, because I think he's going to have to. But they'll be a fun team to follow.
Tom, what else you got?
My next one is kind of, everybody thinks that Alabama or Clemson are, they're going to win the national title. But what if it's not Alabama or Clemson?
You taking the field?
No.
No,
I'm taking a specific team. Which program, in your mind, is the most likely team to not only get past Alabama or Clemson, but to win the title? And I think that team is Georgia.
I agree.
And at 7-1, I like that price because I don't think there's that large of a gap between Georgia and Alabama, at least on the roster and in talent. We've seen them play games. They've been close games. It's not like Alabama lords over them. And Georgia lost to Alabama last year, not because of its players, but because of some questionable decisions on the sidelines. And I think if that gets evened out, this is a Georgia team that could beat Alabama in Atlanta, could get to the playoff. And if it had to face Clemson or Alabama again, it could beat them in that title game. So at 7-1, I mean, I'm not expecting it, but for those odds, it's only got to happen, 13% of the time. I don't think that's crazy.
Like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. And, I think there's like the SEC to me is interesting because there's a lot of different ways it can happen. Like the SEC is the one conference where like Georgia could go in there. I think we all agree Georgia's going to win the East. I'd be shocked if they didn't win the East.
Agree. So,
well, now Florida's going 12-0 now.
That's right. So like Georgia has is so well positioned to be in that championship game that once they're there, and what is it like they've either led or been tied for 280 of the 289 snaps mm-hmm. against Alabama in the last two games. So once they're there, all they got to do is win and in, And once they're in, particularly with a win behind under the belt against Alabama, they are clearly, if not just the best team in the country, they're clearly good enough to do it. And even if they lose to Alabama, the SEC has shown, and I think this year in particular, it has shown that it is capable of putting two teams in, because everyone's going to think the two best teams are in the SEC. Or there's also a scenario where maybe LSU beats Alabama and LSU gets in the SEC championship game and Georgia could then beat them. I just think, like, there's, for Georgia specifically, given how good we think Georgia is, there is a lot of different ways this can work out. And I actually think there's a lot of different ways it can work out, to just generally speaking, to where there can be two SEC teams in the college football playoffs. And again, once you're in there, hey, you got a great shot. So I like that pick.
There's so Ohio State to win it all is at 8-1, Georgia at 7-1. I would say, Barton, like, what, not equal talent, but both in that top talent tier. Do you think that there's significantly more value in Georgia over in Ohio State?
I do. My playoff prediction is Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, and Ohio State. But I think that it's crazy because I'm calling for two teams in the SEC, but somehow I feel more confident in that Georgia pick than I do in the Ohio State pick. I think Ohio State, you do have to get by Michigan. And you do have to, there's still a lot of unknown at the quarterback position. And so I think I'm not even really worried about Jake Fromm getting hurt. I think he is savvy enough to stay healthy. And I just think that Georgia is it's a safer stock. Less volatile.
Blue chip stock.
All right, Tom.
S&P 500 company.
You got it. What else you got?
My last one is a long shot Heisman play. I'm taking Shea Patterson 28-1 to win the Heisman because my logic behind it is this. Let's say Michigan does win the Big Ten this year. It finally gets past Ohio State. It gets past everybody. It wins the Big Ten. Shea Patterson will be a Michigan quarterback. And an offense now that, if they've won the Big Ten, the Josh Gattis experiment's working out pretty well for the Wolverines at this point. So you know he's going to have numbers in that offense. Michigan would be a Big Ten champ. Odds are it'd be in the playoff. So maybe, you know, with Trevor and Tua, I think, are the clear favorites. And then there's Jalen Hurts. Outside of that, though, 28-1 for Patterson, if Michigan has that kind of season, I think those are very good. I mean, it's a long shot for a reason, but at the odds, I like it quite a bit.
The fact that he's getting about the same Heisman odds as like Jonathan Taylor and Sam Ellinger. And I would agree that he's probably got a better chance at winning than those two.
You do what you want, but you could just burn your money instead of betting on a running back to win the Heisman.
Are we done? Like, is there no more running backs are probably winning the Heisman Trophy?
I think that just the way that, you know, the sport's going with, you know, it's like the NFL. We're seeing more and more passing, and it's just the quarterbacks become more and more important. So it's like, if you're a running back, Jonathan Taylor not only has to have an amazing season where he's got to get 2,000 yards rushing at a minimum, but he also, the running back or any running back, has to do it on a team that's in the playoff, a team that's competing for a national title. And when you look at the teams that are competing for the national title, are we talking about Alabama's running backs or Tua? Are we talking about Clemson's running backs or Trevor? Are we talking about Oklahoma's running backs or Jalen? So the quarterback is the dude that gets all the attention and all the hype, and he's the one that even NFL teams are hyping up for, like NFL draft guys and those kind of people that are just, you know, building it up. You don't hear about running backs anymore. I mean, Justin Herbert is a better odd to win the Heisman because he could be the number one pick in the draft. Whereas
Jonathan Taylor might be the best running back in Wisconsin history, and we've had Wisconsin running backs win the Heisman. We've had Wisconsin running backs have incredible seasons. Taylor might be the best one of all, and nobody's really brought him up as even a possibility. The odds are there for it, but he's about the same spot as DeAndre Swift, and he's got about the same odds as Travis Etienne. So it's just – I'm not saying it's never going to happen, but I think that it's very much going to be the exception to the rule. Like, it's going to have to be a very special running back. I think wide receivers now, even though they have never won a Heisman, are probably more likely to win a Heisman before the running back does.
So when was the last time a playoff team had a running back that was like truly like the focal point of their offense and not sort of a complimentary piece? I know Georgia's
had two.
One game
right.
has been a focal point, but they've almost been sort of complementary of each other. Like, is it Ohio State in 2014?
Ezekiel Elliott, maybe?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
I mean, that was – and even that team, you know, who got the most attention for that run? Wasn't Zeke, although he was great in those games. The dude who got the attention was Cardale Jones because he was the, you know, the story, the third-string running back stepping in, taking over. But it's just – yeah, it's – running backs, it's mirroring what we've seen in the NFL, where running backs are kind of just becoming a more fungible commodity that people tend to overlook.
Out at the Westgate, yeah. You can get odds to make the playoffs. You don't even need to win the national championship, just to make the playoffs. There's a team that when odds opened was at 20-1. And as the odds have been re-racked in the last 2 weeks, it's now at 50-1. Boys, now it's time to sink your teeth in because the USC Trojans are 50-1 to make the college football playoff.
I would take that. Hell yeah.
USC.
It's USC.
USC yeah. Coming from the Pac-12 has the same odds as Miami to make the college football playoff.
I've had enough, Chip. I've had enough. You're sinking. You are sinking so far into this USC hole. I feel like I gotta pull you out of like this addiction. Like, I feel like I gotta grab you and throw cold water on you.
USC there. Has the same make the playoff odds as Baylor.
Baylor's more likely to make it.
No.
I'm telling you, Baylor is more likely to make the playoffs than USC.
Oh. Fight. Fight.
You can't.
Fight.
Fight. Can't make, fight. You cannot make the playoffs without a tough team. And I don't believe USC is a tough team. And I don't believe that they have the, like, it's clear to, like, they're talented. I get it. They are so talented. But it is clear to me that this team under Kelly Helton has not built the necessary atmosphere in that program to play and win at that level. I think Matt Rhule kind of is.
Ooh.
So I see it's tempting. I know it's just back away from the table, away from the table.
But let me present the mathematical side of this argument. At 50-1, this USC team only has to make the playoff 1.96% of the time to justify Chip's bet. Do you think that they could do it two times in 100 seasons?
I mean, absolutely. I'm predicting it.
It's USC. I mean, I understand everything you're saying, Barton, because I don't think it's going to happen. But at 50-1, I mean, come on.
Who else can I get at 50-1?
Okay, this is the 50-1 group. At 50-1, you can get Wisconsin. At 50-1, you can get the Miami Hurricanes. At 50-1, you can get Oklahoma State. Michigan State is 25-1. Stanford's 50-1. TCU's 50-1. Baylor's 50-1. Syracuse is 50-1.
I would take several of those programs over USC. I'd take Wisconsin. I'd take TCU. I'd take maybe this is lover scorned here. Maybe last year I picked them to the playoffs last year.
And they went 5-7.
They went 5-7. But this I think that those other teams you mentioned, to me, I would be more inclined to take.
I understand that
y'all. I don't know that I'd take Baylor. Maybe I'm not there on Baylor yet, but I would take Wisconsin over USC.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to USC, I feel like we're not wrong, but I feel like in the media as a whole, there is a definite eagerness to bury it or just write it off. Because, and I take this for my, what really confirmed this to me was the AP poll that came out this week.
One point.
There are 62 voters in the AP poll. USC finished with 1 point, which means that for those of you who aren't familiar with how the voting works, there was one person who put USC in their preseason top 25, and they put them at 25. So it was just okay, I'll put you here. Arizona had a point. Arizona State had 3 points. West Virginia had 3 points. Appalachian State, which lost its coach to Louisville and lost a lot of key players, had 5 points. So it's, I think we're, oh, hell, Minnesota had 7. And USC could only show up on one ballot at 25. I feel like everybody's a little too down on USC, which I think is why I don't think it's going to happen, but it's why I'm very much in Chip's corner where I think, man, this is still USC. It's still talent. And at the end of the day, talent's going to win a lot of football games in this sport.
I mean, I'm going to tell you what, like, the math doesn't work with their talent. Like, they have Talanoa Hufanga at safety is a first round talent. Drake Jackson, true freshman defensive end, first round talent. Christian Rector, the other defensive end, it will get drafted. The Marlon Tuipulotu, Jay Tufele, defensive tackles are NFL talents. Like, without question, they are. Their receiving core is like one of the best in the country. JT Daniels is a absolutely no doubt talent at quarterback. And then they got Graham Harrell at OC. Like, I get it. I just can't trust them anymore. But man, it is weird. It is weird to see how much talent they have. And if they don't get it together this year, then it'll be fun to see Urban Meyer get it together next year.
And then they go 12-0 and reach the playoffs.
Yeah. Urban Meyer, looking at that early slate, like if this is all legit, if Urban Meyer really is like kind of sniffing around at this thing and he's, I can't even imagine how the itchy trigger finger he's got right now, looking at that early slate of games for USC, looking at the idea they may go like 2-4 to start the season, and looking at the roster he could potentially inherit if he actually takes his job. I mean, that thing is ready made to win right now if they get a good coach and a good strength and conditioning program. So, hey, maybe Graham Harrell is the answer. That was the missing piece, and off they go. But there's no question the talent is all the way there.
Well, we're doing the lock spot. It's not USC in particular, but there were Vegas released odds. It was from BetDSI that Meyer would be coaching by September 2020. And the yes is minus 300. No is plus 240.
Wow.
Was it coaching USC or just coaching?
Just coaching anywhere. But I think that USC makes the most sense as the most likely candidate to get him, because I don't think Urban Meyer is going to go back to his sideline to coach blue blood program.
I agree. So Barton and USC broke up, and I had to, give it a little bit of time. I had to come ask permission about, hey man, you mind if USC and I start hanging out just a little bit? You can be cool with that.
Yeah. And it's making me super emotional, and like, I don't like seeing you guys together, and I'm really not very supportive of the relationship.
we were out at beers and you were like, hey man, just beware.
Yeah,
like USC will burn you. Like,
right. I'm you're doing my this friend, for you, man. I'm doing this for you.
Yeah. We will see how it goes. Any other shots that we want to take here before we get out of here?
No,
all good.
I'm all good. I'm ready to rock.
All right,
let's kick it off.
You can follow him at Barton Simmons. You can follow him at Tom Fornella. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We will be back with you next week. Full slate. I think we're going to come in with an early edition of week one locks just to get you set for the Thursday games, because since we got such a loaded slate, maybe Thursday and Friday too, depending on how the time works out. Then, of course, our regular week one locks part two will be recorded on Thursday morning, and you can get it dropped right to your podcast device by about 11 a.m. noonish on the East Coast. So make sure that you subscribe so you don't even have to worry about check-in. It just gets delivered to you all for free 99. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.